Yes. Don't look at my labia. Stop.
Okay.
Stop.
I'm not looking.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Between Two Labia, the show where we illuminate, educate, and yes, sometimes even laugh out loud.
And we're between the two labia.
And I'm your host, Dr. Smita Rahman, a.k.a. Gyno Girl. And today I'm speaking with someone who knows labia very well. It's Dr. Shiva Gafrani, OBGYN since 1999. And she literally is between two labia when she's delivering those babies. She's also a warrior patient, a cancer survivor, and just an all-around boss. Thank you, Dr. Gafrani, Shiva, for joining me today.
Thank you.
This is so awesome.
Talking about my labia.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, let's start with something serious. Let's tell us about your origin story. Like, every good superhero has an origin story.
Yeah.
Like,
and villain.
And villain. And so, like, how did you become an OBGYN and what drew you to women's health?
Well, I wanted to do jewelry and it didn't work out. So I decided,
there you
go. Start looking at labia. No, I really.
Big bejeweled their labia.
Big, you know, bejeweled labia.
Yeah.
But that's be specific.
Yeah.
It's not a right. Gloss. We should not be bedazzled.
No, we're not bedazzled.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I came to it late. I was a little bit wayward in college. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I took pre-meds right after I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually truly thought the gynecology was gross. I wanted to be a general surgeon or a pediatrician.
Right.
And then I went through my rotation and I loved it. And I realized, oh my God, you get to operate.
Yeah.
And you get to be close friends with your patients and get to know them and be their primary care doctor. And all the labia happened to be there. And that was just a side effect. It's not really the thing that we care about the most. And then I did it. And it's great.
Absolutely.
Exhausting.
It's exhausting.
But it's just rewarding. Amazing. Miserable.
Yeah.
Magical.
Yeah. All the things. All the things. You've been doing this since 1999, it sounds like. What are the biggest changes you've seen in OBGYN? And so
it's like you're calling me old. because so many changes. I mean, all jokes aside, speaking of labia, we've seen changes throughout, right?
Oh.
We never went through, because of my age and your age, the period of time where people completely didn't groom.
Yes.
But we went through like
all
the landing strip, bald, all the different.
The border things.
I think what we've experienced the most, which is the most distressing, sadly, is that this onslaught of information, which should be great with the internet, has really fucked everything up.
Absolutely.
Because it's not all good information. It's not mostly good information. It's information that is meant to scare people. You've heard me say this. It is information that tends to be anti-feminism cloaked as female empowerment.
I love this.
Yeah.
Explain.
So it's this idea that I'm going to give you all the information to empower you against your clinician.
Yes.
Which naturally means like you must be in contention.
Right.
Which brings patients into the medical sphere with this like anger and hatred. Yes, there's a lot of paternalism in medicine. There's
still,
a lot of things that are happening at the hands of male and female physicians that are not good.
Yeah.
But to frame it in this way really disempowers women because it gives them wrongful information. It actually fills them with shame. How much shame do we see for women about being on the birth control pill, birthing by a cesarean section, feeding their babies with formula?
This or even is getting anesthesia during.
Oh, getting anesthesia, getting an epidural.
Yeah.
So this is anti-feminism cloaked as female empowerment. And it pisses me the fuck off.
I agree with you. I think you should write that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the truth. And the truth of the matter is also, like, you know, we were actually trained in a patriarchal system. So when people tell me that, like, it was a woman doctor that said this, it doesn't surprise me because that's how we learn. You know, we learn that the cervix has no nerve endings.
No nerve endings. Supports the patriarchy. It's sad. I mean, it's bad enough when we hear men say things that are disparaging, dismissive,
gaslighting.
When I hear a female physician do it or a female clinician, it's a bit worse. It's, we should know better. And we've been
totally
that way.
Totally. It's kind of like when you hear something bad happens in the world and you're just crossing your fingers at your wrists. It's the same thing. On your website, you share you've gone through some miscarriages, ovarian cancer, surgical menopause. How do you think these personal experiences have really shaped how you practice medicine and how you connect with patients?
I mean, it means that I know that no one has to give a shit because this stuff is easy, right? No, I'm kidding. It actually literally has helped me. I mean, I always joke like, okay, God, I've been through it. You don't need to keep showing me. I can, yeah. You know, I can sympathize with empathizing.
Yeah.
I think that I was a good clinician before. I think I was empathetic. Right. You and I talked about empaths, right?
Yeah.
But listen, now I really literally know some of the little logistical, emotional, physical, and like physiologic things that happen when you've had multiple pregnancy losses, when you've had a vaginal birth that's gone awry,
sure.
when you've had two, you know, chosen C-sections, when you've had ovarian cancer, when you've had your bladder operated on because you had a hole put in your bladder by your surgery, when I've had bariatric surgery, like all the different things. And
right.
so each time, yeah. I not only reinforce my medical knowledge, but I learn little tricks of things that doctors just don't get to know. And it's not our fault, right? It's like, you know, sitting in the back of the plane as a when you're flying versus being the pilot. If the pilot's out in the back of the plane, he'd learn different things.
Right.
Or she'd learn different things. So I think it's helped me. Of course, I say that because I've survived all those things.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume I'll continue to survive whatever gets thrown my way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, and I think, you know, it's not like people that don't experience these things aren't necessarily, you know, a good doctor,
exactly.
clinician, whatever. I mean, we know men will never experience majority, but we know a lot of male great OBGYNs and you know, many of them are very empathetic.
You might recall that my four partners in my practice,
yeah.
so five of us are male.
Right.
And they are amazingly empathetic. And yet, as a joke, I have a vagina and I've used it before.
Yeah.
And so I'm able to speak to these things, right? Like, I know what a hot flash feels like.
Yeah.
It's not like you're just tritzy.
No,
you're
it's
like,
a full,
you know, like anxiety in your vein. So
yeah.
there is something different to be said. I agree. I don't think it means you're necessarily a better clinician, but it has.
But maybe that's why, you know, they say to women doctors, like people that are, you know, under the hands of women physicians, and have better outcomes.
Well, yes. I mean, that is an entirely different thing, right?
Yeah.
We know. So I don't think you have to have gone through it in order to empathize, but I do think that uniquely, it shouldn't be uniquely female.
Right.
It tends to be more female that we listen a little bit more.
Right.
And that's why we have better surgical outcomes, right?
We're listening to it. I mean, that's just the data, guys. We're just,
that is the data.
Speaking the truth,
not because of our labia.
Yeah.
But it could be.
It could be.
We're just the labia have a lot going for them.
Yep.
So you never know.
I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. But let's do this something fun that I came up with. It's called the labia lightning round.
I'm ready.
All right. Okay. What's one common myth about labia you wish people would stop believing?
Oh, that bald is better. Bald is not better.
Not all.
Bald is not better.
No.
Or that smaller is better.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
People seem to think that like small, light, tough labia, P.S., why is it not better? Because we know that there are nerve endings all down the labia that are part of the clitoris. It's not just the little nubbin.
Yep.
So if you have like thin, petite little labia, you actually might not have some of the same pressure that's going to lead to orgasm and pleasure and things like that. So
absolutely, yeah.
Chubby little labia.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Perfectly fine.
And we like bald. Bald is,
right.
Well, I shouldn't say that. If you like bald, it's fine.
Yeah.
But it can sometimes lead to some issues.
Because there are plenty of people who get alarmed that their labia disappear. And we know that happens too.
Yeah.
In perimenopause, menopause,
yeah.
and people with birth control pills, like the disappearing labia is
they
a real
disappear. Where did that go?
You don't know. My mom, maybe. Labia come in all shapes, size, and color. What do you think the one thing you want people to understand about normal labia? What's normal?
I mean, it's like, what's a normal nose, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is literally just a part of your body. It will look, and this is what I say. This is the truth. I will look at the camera when I say this.
Yeah.
I've had thousands of women in my 26 years doing this who have come to me and saying things like, I'm so embarrassed. Like, I don't like the way it looks. And I've said this for years, and I know I'm right.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to say this about men because, of course, some of the women are in female relationships, but I don't think they're embarrassed in front of their female partners. But when it comes to men, they are just happy to be there. They are not scrutinizing what your labia or vulva look like.
Yeah.
I bet they don't even pay attention to it.
Yes.
They're just happy to be there.
Yeah.
I think men should chime in, tell me if I'm right. I think I am.
Your comments.
They're just happy to be
there. Yeah. They're happy to be there.
They're happy to be there.
Yeah. So if labia could talk, what would they tell us?
Please don't shave me bald. Please don't scour me.
Yeah.
Please don't shave me bald.
Yeah.
Don't use a lot of product.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't spend $20.
Yeah. I'm not supposed to smell like roses.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to smell like a human.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm not a special smell.
Yes.
And that's okay. Well, what's the best line you could look down there? LED? What do you think?
I don't know, because you know what's so funny? Uh-huh. I know as clinicians, we're supposed to kind of encourage people to like, look at your labia and get to know your vulva and everything. But like, the honest answer is that most people don't. So I guess.
I know. I don't think I need.
Like,
and I'm always like, did you look at your labia?
Right. Well, and a lot of my patients want to see it like,
right after they birth the baby.
Oh,
I'm like, listen, if you haven't seen it before, this might not be the first time.
Yes.
Look at it, you know?
No.
So I'm going to say the best lighting is whatever lighting you want.
Yeah.
If you want to.
If you want.
I mean, I think it's a good idea to for people to know.
Yeah. I mean, I give people a mirror mile.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
What was the funny thing you told me recently that someone called their light?
Oh, so someone came in. And it was so funny because she said it to me as if, like, doesn't everyone know this term?
I was like, am I that old?
She was upset. She potentially wanted her labia made smaller, labiaplasty, a labial revision. And she said, I just don't like it. I mean, you know, about the meat curtains or beef curtains. I was like, what?
Why?
She goes, that's what people call it. I was like, I've never heard it called that in all my years.
Yeah.
This was like 10 years ago, like 16 years into being a doctor.
Oh,
and she called them beef curtains or meat curtains. She did, in fact, have labia that were anatomically a little bit longer than the norm, which is what we say, 4 centimeters in length. So I can understand how in her case, they were getting caught in her pants. They were a little bit cumbersome when she put in a tampon.
Yeah.
So there are some people who qualify to like have them removed appropriately with the right physicians who understand the nerves.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. Another funny thing that someone had called it that I thought was so, and she said it in such a cute way, not in any disparaging way. She called her cranny.
It made me think, yep, there are a lot of nooks and crannies there.
There's a lot for us to kind of make sure that we pay attention to.
The cranny.
Yeah, the cranny.
I love it. Yep, the cranny. All right. Okay, so let's talk about the double whammy, all right? This is what we call the double whammy. But you have a fun term for it, too. It's the ultimate cruel joke that women have to experience, that being so many women are delaying childbirth and delaying childbearing because of, you know, not finding the right partner. Maybe they just weren't ready. Maybe they reached the pinnacle of their career and now they're like, oh, now I'm ready to have a baby. So you're in your 40s, you're postpartum, and guess what? You're sliding straight into menopause or perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the 1-2 punch that like nobody asked for.
Yep.
The sleepless nights, you know, from baby to the hot flashes, like you're not sleeping at night, the painful sex because estrogen's left the chat, you know,
mm-hmm.
No estrogen.
Bye-bye.
No libido because when you got cracked nipples and you got, you know, diaper blowouts, like who's born? Like nobody.
Who's diaper? Yours?
We don't know.
Maybe so.
He's the one. Depends on what time of delivery.
Yeah, maybe.
You know. Depression and anxiety, all of things, right? Like people experience it all. Sheba, why do people put that on their baby shower card?
Oh my God, seriously, right? Give us help. Well, and as you know, tomorrow I'm talking about peri postpartum pause.
That's what she passed. I love
it. And I experienced it myself. I was almost
41. That's a
PPP. I was thinking, actually, as an aside, because I jokingly call it the other P word.
Right.
Yeah. Perimenopause, the other P word. There's so many P's in our lives. Period. Mm-hmm. Perimenopause, pregnancy, postpartum.
Yeah. I call it the periods of hormonal flux.
So that peri-postpartum time. So you are, like, I joke, I'm in the hospital holding my baby. She's almost, you know, she's like 5 hours old and I'm almost 41. And I'm like, you're still... I can't see you. I need feeders. Fuck. I said, my postpartum or my perimenopausal? Which one is it?
Like one.
And the truth is, it was both. And the problem is that the regular postpartum time, which I talk to all my patients about, they could be 20. And I say, postpartum, you are hypoestrogenic.
Yeah.
Everything is going to hurt. It's not just that you don't have the libido for the reasons that you had said, which are true, of course. Like, you're exhausted. Something has exited one way or another out of your body.
Right.
As I joked, you're in love with someone else.
Yeah.
But it's very physiologic.
Yeah.
Low estrogen is going to mean low libido, and it's going to hurt if you have sex. And people think they're broken.
Yeah.
And they would come back to me months later being like, I'm sex. And at first, when I was a young doctor, I was like, just what's happening? What's happening? And then I had my own baby, and I was like, oh, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
It is as if you are postmenopausal, and that's how nature stopped us from getting pregnant closer than about 1 to 2 years apart.
Yes.
And so it all makes sense, but instead in the modern world, we're like, snakes, have sex. So then if you're in your late 30s, early 40s, which as you said, increasingly common for good and less good reasons, either you've been through pregnancy loss, miscarriages, fertility issues, or like you said, you've chosen to because you're taking care of career or family.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, after your six weeks to several months and you're done lactating, you think everything's going to go back to a nice sine wave of like a normal cycle. And holy shit, you're plummeted into like, you know, the predictably unpredictable perimenopause.
Yeah.
And the concerns are like, first of all, you have to think about how to treat it. Second of all, you might be wanting to have another baby. Do you use birth control? Do you not? So there is a lot. And I do think we need to start paying more attention to it because one thing I learned in the research that we know the birth rate is going down from 15 to age 34.
And going up.
But from age 40 to 44, the birth rate went up by 2% in the last couple of years each year.
Yeah.
So we're going to see this more and more.
Absolutely.
Educate yourselves. And provide some relief for your labia.
Yeah.
When you are postpartum.
Exactly.
Do not feel the need to have sex unless you happen to want it.
Right.
And if you don't,
I say to people all the time, it's not like, oh, it's okay if you don't want to have sex. It's actually natural and normal to be postpartum and not want to have sex.
I mean, plus you hate your husband. You're like, what, or if that's who you're with, because you're like, why did you do this?
Right. And why are you snoring? Oh, I'm sorry. Why are you breathing this to me?
It's like, what?
I love when all the husband was really nice. I didn't sleep last night. And I like walk in doing rounds. And yeah. Really? Because I walked in and you were snoring.
Yeah.
Someone was like, somebody was like, not mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, now we know, like, obviously, everyone's heard of the genital urinary syndrome or menopause. And because it's the same physiologic process, we are now calling it the genital urinary syndrome of lactation. Again, that estrogen plummets, the vagina feels it, the vulva feels it, our labial friends.
The labia. Ask your gynecologist, ask your OBGYN.
Yeah,
if you were postpartum, say, I heard these two doctors, Shiva and Samina. And you should be getting vaginal estrogen.
Right.
If you're thinking
about vaginal potentiate. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And pelvic PT is a must for everyone postpartum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that is just, do not stop. Go, just go straight to PT at 6 weeks.
Right.
So like, no matter how.
So that you don't have to pee.
Yeah, exactly. Which is another thing we should talk about. But, like, the incontinence happens and, you know, it's like, you can't let. I mean, I wear condoms underwear because there was no that I've tried it.
Because you birthed.
Yeah.
Humans.
Had to be hard. Even that big. But, you know, it didn't matter. Okay, let's do another lightning round about this, okay? What's harder, soothing a colicky newborn or explaining perimenopause to your male counterpart?
Definitely the latter.
Yeah.
Explaining things to... Explaining things to a man. I mean, my husband and I laugh because he'll be like, I know, I don't understand. And I'm like, you don't even know how much you don't understand.
Yeah.
And he'll say, like, no, I know, I just admitted that I don't understand. I'm like, no, because you don't even know how much you don't know that you don't know that you understand. And he's like, I am not going to win this.
Right.
No, you are not going to. Because it's like rage-inducing to me that they can't even fathom what they admit they don't know. They can't fathom how much they don't know.
Well, and you feel like a foreigner in your body, and that never goes away.
No.
Yeah. What's more painful, vaginal tears during sex or having sex in your 40s with zero estrogen?
Oh. I mean, listen, here's the truth. They're both labia. So much tension down there.
Oh, my God. It's so hard. If postpartum and perimenopause were a buddy cop movie, what would the title be?
Oh, my gosh. So I think that they should either be Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
Or since we're talking buddy cops, do you remember that movie Turn Hooch?
Yeah.
Just thought that would be a good one for her to teach.
There you go.
Yeah.
Which is more realistic or unrealistic? Bounce back bodies or me ever doing Kegels? Because literally,
actually, I'm not going to do. Listen, bounce back bodies are ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But probably still easier than Kegels.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you are the sex med doctor. Is anyone doing Kegels appropriately enough time and not too much?
And not too much. That's the thing.
That's the problem.
Because that's always the question.
Yeah.
Should you really be Kegeling? And, you know, we talked about this before, but, like, at the end of the day, if you have sexual pain, don't go around Kegeling willy-nilly.
Right?
You know, you might.
Willy-nilly. Do not be lifting those Kegels. Really. Listen, the two things that I think are terrible to say to women.
Yeah.
Just use lube.
Yes.
Terrible. Very few people will get away with just use lube.
Right. And that's
there's so many reasons. We can do a whole podcast episode on that. And just do your Kegels. You're never going to hear your Kegels right.
Yeah.
If you do them enough. You might be overdoing it. Just see a book.
Yeah, find out if that's what you need. We don't even know. Like, someone needs to examine you before you just go out and start
just doing your Kegels.
Clothes or putting stuff up there that you don't need to put up there. So
put stuff up that you need up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One more thing. One word that happens when sleep deprivation meets a ragey perimenopausal woman.
Divorce.
Okay. Yeah.
The minnow divorce.
Postpartum, that's it.
Got
Baby, don't need you anymore.
No, we're kidding.
We're kidding.
Kind of sad.
Sorry.
Getting itch.
Yeah. I mean, don't you just want to say to some of your patients that are like pushing that baby out, like, you don't know what's on the other side of the side?
No, I do. Well, and honestly, I do say it. It's not like I want to. I say it. I try it. Listen, I say this a lot to my patients.
Right.
I don't want to idealize it, and I don't want to, like, demonize it. All of it, like, womaning in general, and certainly postpartum and having a baby and perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah.
This is why I keep joking.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift, so fucking smart. Miserable and magical. It's all miserable and magical, right?
It's true.
And I keep saying that the more that I can find the magic in things, I can blunt the edges of the misery. Because all of it is all of it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
No.
That's true.
All of it has parts of it. So, like, yeah, you can never, when people see me all the time, I never knew. No one told me this would happen after I had a baby. And I said, you're right. It probably didn't. But here's the truth. Some people do. I tell people a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But you can't hear it or receive it because you just don't know.
Right.
Until you're in it.
And so true.
Right.
I mean, I have to say, my first postpartum, I was not happy. It was not. I mean, yeah, I was happy. But it was not like, you know,
I was not happy.
Yeah, but she is right. But you don't even know like how bad it is until, and then each postpartum period, my third postpartum period was set because I knew what I needed.
Yes. Yeah.
This one, you want to come home from the hospital and just think, oh, I have to figure out dinner tonight.
No, gosh.
You don't want to be doing
well. And you're like dealing with, I mean, labia or like on fire.
Yes.
Maybe that will burn.
And you're all wearing ice down in
everything.
Peonies.
It's a lot.
So, yeah.
But this is what I say all the time too. So it's like, if you really knew, you might not do it.
Yeah.
But then there's a mistake where we're like, oh, but you forget, which is also not exactly true. Like, you forget, as a joke, that you can go back to the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
But you don't fully feel it. It's always there.
Yeah.
Like, I have the PTSD every time I hear a baby cry. I'm like, someone waking me up. So it's, again, it's like life. Good and bad, miserable and magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say we probably do it wrong in this country, too, because don't you think, like, our cultures that we're from?
Yes.
Like, women get pampered those parts.
This is what I say. I say to all moms, you need, if we were in our country, in any country, you would have your village.
Yes.
And you would have the community raising the baby. It wouldn't be called help.
Yeah.
Right? It wouldn't, like, you sending the baby to the nursery or getting a baby nurse or having someone is not help. It's community raising the children together.
Yeah.
And in this country where we claim to love mothering and women, we should be more committed to that. We should be more committed to it. So women should be able to have a village and they shouldn't feel like they're asking for help.
Yeah.
The community is supposed to raise the baby together.
Right. And it's like, you know, some of these places, like someone takes the baby and you go to sleep every night.
Yes. Or you are your nurse.
Yeah.
And then hand me the baby.
Yeah.
And then you get taken care of and I will.
Absolutely.
Not that I ever want them with baby.
No, I'm not.
I like to do it.
Yeah,
just hand them off. Like,
20 teachers.
Not the baby.
It's not a thing. Not the baby. Oh, my God. All right. Let's talk about some of these, the modes that we have here. So there's painful sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vaginal dryness.
Mm-hmm.
Libido's missing.
Mm-hmm.
Random rage at your partner for just chewing too loudly.
Oh, my God. Breathing.
Yeah.
Why are they breathing?
Why do women act like we're thrilled to be able to get our body back or... This whole, let's just talk about the bounce back culture for a second. It is infuriating to me.
Yeah.
So like, and, you know, again, it goes back to the village, right? Like people in Hollywood, you know, on Instagram, whatever, they're showing their bounce back bodies. It's because they probably have a village of people that are
helping them with nutrition. Village.
Yeah. Getting exercise because someone's taking care of the baby.
Yeah.
They're getting sleep.
They're getting their facials. They're getting vajazzled.
Yes.
But they also, by the way, are having pictures edited and they're not like, like if we saw them in real life, they would have some lines and wrinkles.
Right.
It should be bounce forward.
Bounce ahead.
No, it's ridiculous. I laugh. I always think that my friends and I were all on a vacation one time and we were on an island with our husbands and it was like five of us. I was the heaviest by far and at the time I still wasn't even that heavy. We're all like in our sarongs and trying to hide ourselves.
Yeah.
And there were our midlife husbands literally with every single one of them are big gut.
Yeah.
You're jumping in the pool. Like, they were not self-conscious at all. And I do not ever want to be like a man for a billion reasons.
No.
The least of which, labia are much out of the testicles.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But that's something out of their playbook we should take. Like, why are we so self-conscious and, like, so self-critical about all these things? And so I think we do that to each other and we go to ourselves.
And we judge each other.
Yeah.
We act like, you know, that we should be doing something. Everyone's judging you for how you're raising your kid or that you're working or that you're not working or you got an epidural. You didn't get an epidural.
Right.
Oh, C-section, you know, it's a lot.
And mind your business.
It's mind your business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when this moment collides, when we have sort of the Bermuda Triangle postpartum colliding during menopause.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about vaginal estrogen for vaginal health. We talk about pelvic floor therapy. What other things do you recommend for your patients?
I mean, I wish that every single postpartum person could have a therapist, and not because they had a traumatic birth, because they need, but just because it's so good to process and talk about.
Sure.
Talk about your pregnancy, your delivery, because many are not easy, even if they end well, and talk about your relationship, because your relationship is about to change and might change for the worse if you haven't strategized it. So I think a great therapist is so important and so valuable.
Yes.
I think that we really, really, unfortunately, need to talk a lot more about birth control. Yeah. And we don't talk about it enough in general, even though this is what you and I do all day, every day.
Right.
But I mean, now things are changing.
The toddlers, for the toddlers will have you believe that we're just pushing it down to the rest of our...
And yeah, but you need to know about, like, what are the pros and cons? And I want every woman to know that there are multiple different ways to prevent or to get pregnant, but you need to know that there are pros and cons to each.
Yes.
And it's
hard. It has to be new ones.
Yeah, it has to be new ones. There's no one right thing, and none of them should be vilified.
Right.
None of them are terrible, but none of them are perfect. And no clinician would say they're perfect.
Yeah.
So...
And it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, we shouldn't practice cookie cutter land. It shouldn't be like, this is... The one right thing for everybody.
Yes.
Everyone is so different. There's difference about their own issues that we have to really analyze it. You said something about that just made me think about the obstetric trauma issue. Because I feel like, you know, again, I feel like OBGYNs get vilified for so many things. But like the deliveries for sure, right? Like, but I think what people sometimes don't realize is that, you know, I had an OB that taught me. And he, every time he got the baby out, and be like, thank God we got the baby out.
Yeah.
And he literally said it every single, it was the easiest delivery or the most complicated.
Yeah.
The first words out of his mouth were, thank God we got the baby out.
Yeah.
And that dropped so much crap. Like, it really centered me when I was learning obstetrics, because it made me feel like you don't know when things are, you know, even for the most normal vaginal deliveries.
Well, and you and I've seen it. I mean, this is where I never want to fearmonger, because I do want to, like, provide comfort and safety and everything. But the whole purpose of being an OBGYN is to be there if things aren't okay. In other words, if I knew someone was going to deliver easy, go deliver at home. It's messy, but have at it, right? Like, you know.
Water birth away.
Let someone else tell your baby. The problem is that people like to quote things like that in nature, vaginal births are supposed to happen. And you and I know that in nature, nature has a very and people, unfortunately, babies and women died in childbirth. So nature has a really different endpoint. I always say we need to respect nature, learn from nature, take the cues from nature that we can to be able to live healthily, and also recognize where we need to say, oh, wait, nature, you actually don't want us all here.
Yeah.
You don't want this population here.
Yes.
You're trying actively with viruses, bacteria, hemorrhage during childbirth, things like that. You're trying to off us. That's okay. We can't be mad at you, but we need to stand against you.
Right.
Nature did not want me to be alive at 55 after ovarian cancer and menopause. I should have been dead a long time ago, right? So, like, but we're fighting against it.
Right.
So I wish people recognize that we're not here to say, like, every birth is so dangerous. We're here to say some births can be, and it's not predictable.
Right.
You just, when shit hits the fan, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it can happen fast and furious.
And that's why we have to act fast and very abruptly to change our course and, you know, get the baby out the fastest that we can for the purpose of both mom and baby's life, right? Yeah. So that's why I think that people then also get traumatized by it.
Because,
of course, like, you don't, sometimes you try to explain it, but if you're really having to go, you know, you gotta go.
Well, and since we're between the two labia, I say to parents, I say to moms all the time, I want, at the end of our experience together, I want you and I both to feel validated, and I want you and I both to feel communicated with, because this is your birth journey, but this is my daily, I have to do this all day, every day, and I have to feel good about it.
Yeah.
And while I want you and the baby to be happy and healthy, that's like the baseline.
Yeah.
We can achieve that. I also want you to feel honored and collaborated with.
Yeah.
And I give a shit about your labia and your vagina and your vulva.
Yes.
And absolutely. So, like, people can really want a vaginal delivery. And then 4 hours after pushing, they've gotten their baby out vaginally. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm left with now. And so we do need to talk about that more, again, without fear mongering. We have to remember, there's no easy way to get a baby out.
There's no easy way. Yep, exactly. And so, and everyone's bought, and you don't, it, the first labor is your real trial, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we know. And so we don't know until we try.
Yeah.
But you said something interesting about the labia and the vagina, pelvic floor, all the things. I think urinary incontinence is a new genetic, right? And I've talked about it for myself, you know, time and time again, that don't put me near a trampoline.
Yeah.
Don't make me do jumping jacks. I don't do jump rope anymore. I have a great incontinence underwear.
Yeah.
I should start.
You should.
Gyno girl underwear.
Underboost?
Yeah. Anyway, but let's talk a little bit about it. I mean, like, you know, are there ways to do things during the delivery that would prevent
I mean, this issue? The honest answer is really know. I mean, we could say, oh, it depends on how the doctor or the midwife has controlled the head and things like that, but it's not true. I mean, the head is pushing on the bladder.
Right.
Even if you end up with a C-section, the head is pushing on the bladder. So there will be a certain potential. Now, you and I both know there's things like your genetics. Like, what kind of tissue did you inherit?
Yes.
There years ago, there was decades ago, there were studies by Nichols who did a lot of vaginal surgery. People who had more stretch marks, for example, maybe there was a correlation with their connective tissue.
Yeah.
We know that postpartum using vaginal estrogen can help the elasticity and decrease some of that incontinence, but it's a really mechanical issue. I think what we shouldn't do, which we do already do, is kind of act like, well, no, of course, everyone pees on this film, as if it's just acceptable.
Right.
We should talk through and make it very clear that for those women who choose to not want to go through that risk, it is okay to choose a C-section. There are risks to a C-section.
Yeah.
So I really honor bodily autonomy and
infections,
but women deserve to know about both.
Yeah.
We talk about C-sections in such a vilified way, and we talk about vaginal births as if it's so easy, but it's still a procedure that your body's going to have to heal from.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't make women, I mean,
vaginal births can be turned operative very quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. And even ones that don't, like, listen, some of the women who are my easiest patients, because they have plopped that kid out fast, fast, furious, easy, amazing, they will be peeing on themselves. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And their uterus would be prolapsing.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Most likely your body's going to sustain something. And we need to talk about that more so that women know that they can actually get help. It's not so easy to fix a bladder. We know that. And urinary incontinence is still a problem. But there are ways to do it. But I think it's, you know, it's fascinating. A couple of weeks ago, I had a patient who, we were talking about her mom's birth history as it pertained to her. She's in labor. And she's like, no, my mom said it was really easy. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Amazing. I said, you know, a lot of women kind of like, they forget or they just feel like they have to realize. The next morning, I'm doing rounds. Her mom's there. I said, oh, we were talking. Do you mind telling us, like, what happened? And I said, how was your delivery? She's like, oh, my God, easy, easy. I mean, I was asleep and there were forceps enough. I said, oh, and so how are you doing now?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I mean, of course I pee on myself. Doesn't everyone? Like, this poor woman at 70 was like, everybody must pee on themselves. Imagine if you said that to a man.
I know.
You're going to pee on yourself. By the way, you're going to birth a kid. It's the most beautiful thing in the world that you're going to meet your continent for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And at best, you're going to get some fancy underwear.
Yeah.
I know girls.
Yeah. Good luck. I mean,
it's crazy.
I mean, well, and the other thing is, you know, some people who have C-sections, it might not prevent the incontinence.
Yeah.
It's just the weight of the baby on the pelvic floor, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. But we do think that, you know, that's why people do the vaginal bypass.
Yes.
Bless you. Just to call it vaginal bypass surgery. But, you know, we know there's different types of incontinence. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the classic stress incontinence, which is I cough, I laugh, I sneeze, I pee on myself. Or as women always say, like you said, a lot of my patients say, I can't be on a trampoline and I can't do jumping jacks, which I always feel like I haven't done a jumping jack or a trampoline, not because of incontinence, just don't do them.
Right.
So if, like, if that's the only part of your life you couldn't do, probably acceptable.
Yeah.
But the truth is, for a lot of women, they're like, you know, that, like, gotta go.
Yeah.
Like, they cough, they laugh, they sneeze, they pee.
People have COVID.
Right. Coughing, COVID. They go gunning and they're like, I can't run more than 2 miles because I have to stop and pee on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And that's really life altering. And then there's virgin incontinence where, like, the minute you think about it, you have to pee.
Yes.
Comes up because the muscles and the nerves have kind of disconnected themselves.
Yeah.
And then there's that urgency symptoms where women just feel kind of like they have to pee. They're not peeing, but they feel it all the time. As I always joke, you should not feel your bladder.
Right.
Your bladder and your vagina, you shouldn't actually. Not that you shouldn't touch them. You can touch them.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to feel them.
Yeah.
If you feel them, something's happening. And that urgency is something that can be relieved with dietary changes, things like that. So we have, as you know better than I do, even, we have treatments for all these, but none of them is perfect.
None of them is perfect.
So,
I mean, I guess the sling, you know, probably is the best way to go, but, you know, pluses and minuses.
Pluses and minuses.
All of the medication, slings, surgeries. Pestries, all of it.
Yeah. But it's still extra procedures.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is why things. So you're saving yourself from not having surgery by not having a C-section.
Yeah.
But then on the back end, you might need something else.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean everyone should have a C-section, but it doesn't mean everyone should have a vaginal birth.
Right.
And we just need to be more informed on the process.
Absolutely.
And it really is like we always try to do, you know, informed consent and shared decision making and all things. But at the end of the day, you know, sometimes it just. No, I guess I should. That's always our goal.
Right.
But in OBGYN, sometimes we have to move quickly and do our thing. with the consent of the patient, of course, but obviously it's a little difficult sometimes with urgent situations.
Well, and I think it's hard. I mean, I always joke with like my financial planner, like, of course I want you to like help me understand, but the whole reason I use you is because I don't know how to financially plan.
Yeah.
I don't know how to build a house. So this whole idea that we are supposed to like
know everything,
make patients understand everything is absurd.
Yeah.
We don't apply that to any other field.
Yeah.
And yet one of the most complex fields, we're like, well, it should be, you know, informed consent and shared decision-making, when it's actually really not true.
Yeah.
Of course we need to clue you in to try to educate you.
Yeah.
But there's only so much we can do. That's the point of us doing what we're doing. We're, so really what patients need,
point you in the right direction.
Find a clinician that they have trust in, which is not easy nowadays because they're limited by time and all these
things. The insurance companies. Yeah. Okay. And let's talk a little bit about what patients or what women can do for themselves. Well, there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of body image issues. There's all these things that come up. Like how you tell a patient, you know, when they can, how they can advocate for themselves, what they should be doing for themselves, all the things.
Well, I think, I mean, one of my favorite things to talk about is actually just knowledge, like basic knowledge that, again, why in school are they teaching us things like calculus when I really needed to know how to like fix my car and like what my period meant?
Right.
What does that really mean? Yeah. But the basics, like I want women to know, what are you screened for?
Yeah.
Do you know what cancers you're screened for?
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't realize that when you walk out of your gynecologist, you think I had a pap smear. I don't have any cancers.
Right.
No, your pap smear is screening for cervical cancer. You're probably getting some kind of screening for breast cancer if you're over 35 or 40.
Yeah.
If you're over 45, you're getting colon cancer screening.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not screened for any cancer. So know what you're screened for. Know what your symptoms are of all the other cancers that you could be having. Know how often you should see your gynecologist and have a good relationship with your primary care and gynecologist so that if something comes up, I always joke, my paradigm is, it's likely nothing, but let's check it out, right? All at once, we're calming ourselves, it's likely nothing, but let's check it out, because what if it is? So simply knowing that, and then knowing your family history and genetics would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the more kind of, not boo-boo, but like emotional, I feel like so many women are conflicted. They're conflicted about everything. If they work, they're conflicted that they're working too much. If they don't work, they're conflicted that they're not working.
Yeah.
Like, pick a lane, be happy about it, recognize nothing's perfect. Like, if you wish you were working, then, but you can't afford to work right now because you have to be home with your child, then try to enjoy that to the degree you can and then make a plan to work.
Yeah.
Or, but I think women, I almost feel like they're not really as conflicted as they think, but they think they have to appear conflicted.
Right.
Like, they're proverbially always throwing themselves under the bus because they think everyone else is going to judge them.
Right.
But everyone else is all of us.
Yeah.
So if we instead kind of own it,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of people will say to me, like, oh, did you feel bad? But, like, crazy things. Like, both my boys were born in April. They're 4 years apart. Do you feel bad that they had to share their birth month? I'm like, what? No, I feel fucking thrilled that I can have one birthday party and it's cheaper.
One and done.
And I don't feel bad about it. So we still
have two lectures are born nights.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
April 25th and April 4th.
I'm like,
oh, my God. April 22nd and April 26th.
See?
Okay. Anyway,
I share their birthdays.
Yeah.
And I was like, how with it?
Yeah.
Stop being so conflicted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Give yourself grace.
Give yourself grace. And give others grace. Because you're probably actually giving yourself grace, but you're pretending you're not.
Yeah.
Because you're actually judging other people.
That's the truth.
That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. That's what women do to each other, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, we can all uplift each other, do better.
Yeah. And,
you know, because between two labia.
Between four labia.
Between four labia right now.
Really do eight if you count two, right?
Majora minora.
Do we consider them two? Like, is the labia majora two labia?
Yeah.
Labia minora two.
That's a good advice. We have four.
Is it four?
Is it one?
Is it just one?
No,
you're a final girl.
You're the sex
nest.
It works. Let's call it four.
We'll call it four.
Yeah. Majora minora. I have two. You have two each.
Yeah.
So, yeah, eight. There you go.
Eight labia. So many labia.
Plus the big 8 foot labia. So there we go. But if you could rename this between two labia,
what would I name it? Between the. I don't think I would.
Yeah.
I actually think it's good.
Vulvalicious.
Snatchastic.
I do like that.
Yeah.
What do you do? What are you binge watching these days?
I don't binge watch. I binge shop. Well, I do. Will say that when Shrinking comes back on, I love it. Me and my kids love Shrinking. We think it's great.
Yeah.
Love Ted Lasso. They're supposed to be season four. I think they're
five. What about Summer Return for a Year?
Ugh, say two of them watch it, and I actually cannot stand it.
What?
Oh my God.
Just sing
Oh my God, I can't stand it. I'm going to say who I can't stand.
Okay.
I can't stand all of them. They're annoying. They're irritating. I can't stand it. And my kids love it.
That's my bond. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will sit and kind of watch it.
But the finale is out. I mean, when I know this is airing, but tonight is the finale.
Well, I'm not there. I like it. But I do binge shop.
I have shopping.
Yeah. The shopping bro.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, as I say,
you know what though?
Yeah.
I'm not going to throw myself under the bus.
You and I do not have a shopping problem. As I say, I own it. We work hard. We can afford it. I'm not putting myself into debt.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Done.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good for us.
Good for us.
With our
sneakers. Good for our labia.
Yeah.
Good for us. Good for our eight labia. Walkly together.
All of them. Anyway. All right. Cool. Well,
I think that we should ask the audience.
Should
like, what would they want to call it? Would you call it like between two labia or some other like labia-licious?
Labia-licious.
Right. Labias are us.
Between two beef. What are
they? Between two meat curtains.
Meat curtains. Yeah. There you go.
We don't say that disparagingly. True.
No.
Wait. And this is something we should finish with.
Yeah.
We, as female clinicians, I swear with everything, when people say TMI to me, I'm like,
no,
bring it on. I would love to hear something TMI. There's nothing TMI.
I talk about
the dinner table with my kids.
Right.
We do not make fun of people's discharge, about people's labia. No. We actually, and I mean this in a good way, we don't even notice. We don't even notice. As I joke, if you ask me to suction your throat, I would firstly be grossed out.
Yeah.
Because I'm a gynecologist.
Right.
Anything below the belt doesn't matter.
Does not matter.
We don't think twice about it.
No shame.
Yeah.
We don't remember, like.
We don't remember in a good way. We care about you in that moment.
And yes.
We just don't.
No, but like if people are like, oh, I don't want you to see my, but like.
Yeah.
No one's going to.
Well, my joke whenever people are like, I didn't shave my knee.
Yeah. I've got really hairy legs right now. So you don't matter. Isn't it? So yeah, we don't care in a good way because you beat you.
Doesn't matter.
You do you.
Yep.
That's what. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you so much, Shiva, for joining me today. You are always such a breath of fresh air, and I love everything that you say, so thank you so much. We're going to put in the show notes where people can find you.
Thank you.
And Shiva has her, Dr. Ghofrani has her own menopause telehealth platform right now. So if you are in
Connecticut or Florida,
please look her up, and she will help navigate your midlife. And she's still doing some OB with her practice and everything. She's
still doing a lot of
OB. Yeah.
In Connecticut.
No. Yeah. But, you know, she's a great resource because just follow her on Insta as Dr. Shebadge.
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 Shiva G. It was like I was born to be.
Shebadge. She's Dr.
Shebadge.
Yes. Shebadge. So she actually has great content, and it's wonderful to like listen to her go on her tirades. I love it. No, it's great. It's very inspiring, I think. And just so you know, please like and subscribe to my channel and my podcast. This is a little mini series that we're doing within the podcast, within the channel. So, you know, please join me for another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. And also go to Gyno Girl TV. That's where you're going to find both of these. Also, I'm about to release a book in this upcoming, I don't know, 6 months. I don't know when it's coming out, but that manuscript is done. So I'm very excited about it. And the book cover is done. So Brown Girl's Disease, A Guide to Sexual Health and Empowerment Through a South Asian Lens. So
we can't wait.
Yay. Excited about that. But remember, as always, I'm Dr. Sweeney Roman, Gyno Girl. I'm here to educate so you can advocate. Please join me next week. Ryan, it says.
A second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.